If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
You've been listening to a live performance of Study in Red from the Apollo Suns. If you know Winnipeg, Manitoba, up here in Canada, the thought of that city producing an instrumental, psychedelic, jazz-infused rock band is pretty well, in a word, crazy. Located in central Canada, Winnipeg is generally known for two things, cold winters and buggy summers. It was where Neil Young got his start and where the Guess Who reigned but those are rock artists. So when I heard that ostensibly a jam band born out of the tundra of Winnipeg were releasing their third EP, A Relationship of Force, on Color Red, out November 26th, obviously I had to reach out to get the lowdown on the band and their music. Fortunately, frontman and guitar player Ed DeRoche and drummer Glenn Radley obliged and were eager to talk Apollo Sons. You guys are in Winnipeg, Manitoba.
Yep.
Not a place that people would necessarily think is a haven for funk music or jam band music.
I still wouldn't say it's a haven. Yeah.
I can speak to the realities of how that came to be, at least stylistically within our own band and our background, if you'd like.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Okay, so a good contingent of the band studied jazz music from a bunch of American jazz musicians at the University of Manitoba. I personally studied with a guy named Quincy Davis, who's a really great drummer who teaches at the University of North Texas now. And John Gordon and Derek Gardner, who are both like luminaries from New York City, who we're very lucky to have here. And that kind of, at least personally, it really kind of exposed me to like the depth and the vastness of Black American music and culture.
Yeah.
To some extent, just interacting with people from that culture and learning about it in that setting. And then we just share those influences, and we love all sorts of music in that kind of tree.
Yeah, I think I'm actually the only one who isn't like educated in a school sense. Yeah, that way.
So how did you all come together and realize that this was the kind of electric soul music or funk music that you wanted? I mean, it's really, really is all over the place, that you decided to make this kind of organic music.
Well, I was in a band with the original bass player called Electric Soul, believe it or not. That worked out well. And we were just like a new band. It kind of disintegrated, and we were fooling ourselves thinking we were good singers. So when the band broke up, we played about a year of shows where we would just invite local musicians that we really dug, and we would improvise entire sets of music. And we found that reaction was way more enthusiastic than anything we'd ever done before that, because we were just having fun, and like we were getting into fusion and jazz and like Mahavishnu Orchestra and Jeff Beck and like Billy Cobham, and really digging that. So the response was great for that, and we're like, well, let's just do that. Like, let's just like not sing anymore and get some horns. I always wanted horns, so it kind of built up from that, and that's kind of how it all started. And now the band is really solidified over years of touring, and now the core members of the group have been here for a while. And I mean, I'm the only original left from the first four people that we kind of worked with in the first year.
Isn't the number like upwards of 30 people?
Yeah. Well, horn players come and go, minus like the few that we have now. Yeah. You know, we've had people who have played in the band for a month. We're on for a tour. But what's great is that being an uneducated musician in like the university sense, I've got to learn from a ton of really great players, which has been really, yeah, really cool. So that's kind of how it happened. And I think because we're not really genre specific, like we talked about this last night of like, we have so many different bands and genres and kind of vibes that we like, but we kind of feel that we've now refined it over three albums to us.
It's more like we found our font, you know, like what kind of typeface, like serif, sans serif, like we know what it is we're trying to do. And especially with like tones specifically, we've been going really, really deep with that beyond like just composition. Mm-hmm.
How much has being on Color Red helped in that relationship in terms of figuring out the direction for you guys, figuring out how to potentially navigate your way through the United States? Although you've played there quite a bit, I would imagine that being associated with Color Red probably helps.
Well, the Color Red relationship is very new. Like, we've been with them for about 6 months now, and they kind of we began working together in the middle of releasing this EP, which is coming up, because we were supposed to release it a year and a half ago, but with the pandemic, we switched plans. I feel like it's a common thread in most interviews now.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
you know, we had to pivot. But what I really like about Color Red is I feel like we fit in there. Like, it's definitely a great family to be a part of. And some of our favorite bands that we've even started learning, like during the pandemic, we were dissecting songs as a band just to feel, just to figure out what we liked about these songs. And one of the ones we did was Polyrhythmics, Digital Cowboy, which is great. But I feel like they're a really strong kind of connection in the US, especially to help with like the network that they have to now, as we're reintroducing ourselves in a live sense to the US, and they just have this wealth of like respectability in a sense, like, you know, like whenever I'm on their mailing list, whenever they send me something, I'm like, you know, I'm always down to listen to it, and I know it'll be like dope, you know, like a lot of the musicians on who collaborate in that pool are some of my favorite musicians, you know. So
let's talk a bit about our relationship of force. It's an EP, five tracks. Mm-hmm. One of them is really short, but five tracks nonetheless. You said that this was recorded and you had it ready to go a year before the pandemic. Have you gone back and touched anything up, or is it pretty much the same as it was when you left it?
It was like mixed and mastered.
Oh, wow.
Before the pandemic, we had started releasing singles like So Long Ethan and Silver Gloves in anticipation to release it along with like 150 US tour dates. And
we were actually on our first tour only three shows in of the US. So we haven't really been in any real way. So we got as far south as Omaha, Nebraska, and then they started talking casually about closing the border and we went home.
Yeah. Our manager at the time was like, you need to get home immediately. Yeah. So, we pretty much had this album or this EP written, recorded. And I just personally wanted to give it a proper like release. So we just put it off until we could actually do a release show, do some touring, at least in Canada, and like give it like a proper push. Because I saw a lot of friends' bands and a lot of like bands just be like, well, the pandemic's here, let's just release this album, and then it did good for a couple of days, and you know, I guess you can re-release and redirect focus. But we had a bunch of live videos and unreleased live tracks and a lot of content in the bank because we record everything and document everything. Which we will continue to do now.
we managed to like find a brief little window where we could do a similar, like the last batch of live sessions at Paintbox Studios, where we do all of our kind of live video stuff. But we found those windows so that we could kind of float ourselves content wise through that time to have something to talk about, to show, that kind of thing.
Yeah. The songs are pretty, the only thing I wish now is that we could go and, because the band has been working extremely hard over the last few months, like coming out of our lockdown in Winnipeg in Canada, we're rehearsing three times a week, where we're really digging in. We want to be undeniably like great, you know, like we want to be tight as a band.
And we do a lot of, can I swear on this podcast?
Yeah, you certainly can.
Okay. We do a lot of fucked up metronome games every Sunday as a rhythm session. And it's
the honestly, Widowmakers.
The Widowmakers is what is one of the exercises. But anyway, we just like we've noticed some like demonstrable improvements in time, and like the rapidness that we can get good bed tracks in a studio has accelerated. So we've been like very, very aggressively practicing and rehearsing individually and as a group and writing a lot.
So now I'm like, I wish we could go and re-record all those songs, because I'm very happy. Like I love those tunes, but
we sound a lot different.
Yeah.
That's not a bad thing, right? I mean, a lot of your contemporaries and a lot of bands sound one way in the studio and sound totally different live. So it's not like the worst thing ever.
Yeah, and that's kind of like what why I'm not hung up on that, like, because it's just a snapshot of the band as it was, right. And we just unfortunately had to pivot. Like, we were supposed to have a new album already recorded on top of that one, but we had to push back recording dates. So now we're like finally getting in there, but because of that, the new songs we're recording have been revised over a whole year of pandemic time, and you know, we've been working on them. So
we did online writing sessions on Zoom. Yeah, like, well, there was continuity rehearsal wise every week.
Yeah, we were meeting, and even just to play like online board games so we could at least hang out as a band and like stay connected in that sense, I felt was really important. But how we sound live, I feel like the recording now is getting closer to how we sound live now. Yeah, like with the amount of energy and but being in the jam band community and the jazz and funk, like I'm excited to go out and like extend songs now, and like, you know, we do that somewhat, but now through getting way more tighter and like really digging in as a band and getting that group mind think, I feel way more confident that we could extend stuff and like go into uncharted territories, even with a horn section. Yeah, you know, like, and have everyone be involved in that, you know.
Is the plan to release some of that live material eventually, especially when you out on the road? Yeah.
We do board recordings now of every show, and we have at home, we have a dedicated sound tech. And once we have more of a sustainable budget, we are going to bring him on the road. And one thing, I used to think that being called a jam band was such a dirty word. Same with like progressive rock, you know, like when people call us prog rock, I'm like, you know, like, but now I'm like, it's so cool that you can go onto nugs.net or any sort of database and find like these full shows that every show is a little different. And then over the pandemic, I started getting super into the Grateful Dead, of course, and being like, I understand now the culture and the cult following of that band, because like every show was different in any way, for better or for worse. You know, if it was a horrible mistake, or like, you know, or, you know, Garcia was like, we're just figuring that out as we go with the audience. Yeah. And sometimes it's a crash and burn, and other times it's like the most like transformative existential experience. And like listening to more and more of their sets, I'm like, oh, I get it now. I get it now.
I feel like Bob Crew kind of did that for me.
Oh, yeah.
On tour at that festival in BC, just like really, really unbelievably good improvisers hanging out for 4 hours straight. It was just, it was nuts. Right. I can't recall the drummer's name. I think it was Terrence Houston.
Yeah.
He was unbelievably good. I feel like guys like him, or like Eric Moore, or guys like JD Beck, especially currently, people who are kind of like in that kind of community. Matt Garstka as well.
Yeah.
Just people like that who are like undeniably world-class drummers who are making a statement with their thing. And like, I just, encountering that on tour was a very humbling experience.
I feel like in the US, we're going to experience that.
Yeah,
a lot.
I want it. Humble pie, please.
Yeah.
Yeah. And certainly you have label mates, you know, like Deitch from Lettuce is one of those guys who is an unbelievable drummer. Sorry? Yeah.
Danny Mayer.
Danny Mayer. Yeah. I mean, they all have great chops. Lots of those guys down there have. I mean, the owner of the label has.
Oh yeah, Eddie Roberts is like.
Yeah, he's incredible.
Is like, dare I say, legendary? You know.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I can't wait. Like in Canada, there is a lot of great musicians, and in Winnipeg, like Ariel Posen and the Brothers Landreth, and like great musicians. But like, I feel like in the U.S., we're just gonna get like our asses kicked in the best way, in the most fun way, like, because so many of our musical inspirations are based in the U.S. You know,
it's interesting that you mentioned R.L. Posen, because he's also one of these guys that sort of, you wouldn't naturally think he's a guy from Winnipeg, right? I mean, the kind of chops that he has and the way he plays, you wouldn't think that he spends his time in Winnipeg in the winter. I've been to Winnipeg, by the way, so I know how cold it is there. But I remember January in 1997. That was frigid.
The flood. That was the flood year.
I was just just before I was there, just before the flood. But yeah.
Oh yeah.
But cold, man. Cold. I guess you have nothing else to do.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because a lot of the times people are like, you don't sound like a Canadian band.
Right.
You know, and I take great pride in that personally. Not that I have anything against, like, I love a lot of Canadian music, but we do not sound like a typical Canadian band.
Yeah.
Even in our tones and like the timbre of the band, you know, like, I don't know.
I don't like, there are a lot of great players in Canada and there are a lot of great improvisers in Canada, but I feel like there isn't as much of an actual grassroots, like, cultural revolution scale kind of jam band culture existing here in a geographical sense. And I feel like we feel the ripples from the South, and like they got to us, and like, clearly, but so I just feel like I want to understand in a more visceral, like, practical, I'm here right now around this culture kind of situation. Yeah. And like, just to visit like legendary venues and just, or I'm just so excited to get down there.
So what's the plan? The plan is, you have how many dates in the States? Like, you're getting in a van and you're just doing the States?
March 31st is, we're calling it D-Day, I guess. March 31st is the first date of the U.S. campaigns, and it'll go from March until December, on and off, in and out of the U.S. and Canada, and there's 150 plus dates right now.
Wow.
For 2022, and then 2023 we'll probably be moving a little bit more into Europe, but still heavily in the U.S. And I mean, we've been working with Loose Leaf Talent Agency, and they like Lay Special, and they work a lot with, like, in Colorado as well. And Emily and Matt Dolliver work with guests who have been on your show. Like, you know, so it's a tight knit family. It's like, obviously a bigger, like, geographically smaller, but like, the, you know, the U.S. is just a bigger thing.
We faced an issue with density here. If you're not, there's the statistically, half of Canada's population lives along a particular highway in Toronto. So we don't have, we just
it's about a 2.5 kilometer drive from right here.
Yeah.
That highway.
Perfect. So, I mean, just getting that down there, I feel like we're just going to spend a lot of our time, and already through the pandemic, we did a lot of online community growth and like really just making a lot of friends and connections, and a lot of it is in the U.S. Like, obviously Canada has been very good to us and we're going to continue to share music in Canada, but you know, the U.S. is the U.S.
You don't get any, there's no radio play for you guys, right? Like, Power isn't playing you, or City, nobody's really helping out.
We've gotten some really good regional CBC, and college radio has been huge for us. We do live sessions wherever we go. I also just love going into a radio station and playing a couple songs. And generally those people were our first champions, who would play our music, send us, we got festival opportunities because of those, all across Canada. And, you know, I believe that if we're on the road, we should be working 24 hours a day, you know, like, if there's a chance to promote or share our music with anyone. But no, like, the mainstream rock radios, I mean, we're instrumental. We play long songs generally. Yeah. The whole instrumental thing is, I feel like, I don't know, like, our melodies could be played anywhere. But yeah, instrumental music is very intimidating for some people, you know, like, you know, there are no words.
It's like a massive niche, you know, there's niches that are very small but also massive.
I'm
very familiar with a massive niche. Guys, thanks so much for taking the time. Great to meet you, Glenn and Ed. I feel like I've known you my whole life, or at least during the pandemic I feel like I've known you really well. So I can't wait to see what comes next. You're in good hands with Leah and everybody at Color Red.
You've been so awesome.
And thanks so much for taking the time, and good luck with everything. And we're here if you need us, and we're here and we'll be listening. All right.
Yeah. Have a good one.
For more on Apollo Suns, visit apollosuns.ca. Before we leave you, let's listen to another live track from Apollo Suns. This is Dark Knight.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. For more, visit thesoundpodcast.com.